Ch-ch-changes. Don't tell them to blow up on all of it.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Stephen Shepherd, who previously served as senior editor at Newsweek, as editor-in-chief of Businessweek, and was president of the American Society of Magazine Editors, where he's inducted into its Hall of Fame in 1999. He's now the dean of the City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism, which is on the cutting edge of journalism education in the digital age. His new book just out is Deadlines and Disruption, My Turbulent Path from Print to Digital. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephen Shepherd.
Thank you very much, Ian.
And the use of turbulent in the subtitle of your new book, Deadlines and Disruption, that word came up an awful lot last night in the debates. I don't know whether you noticed.
I think he used the word tumult.
Tumult. Oh, that's right. It's not
Governor
so much.
Reagan, yeah.
Well, it's but similar, yeah.
Yes, I use the word turbulent because it describes what's happened to the news industry and also to me personally. The transition, you know, I was a traditional mainstream journalist all my life and had to gradually learn to make the transition to the new digital age. And it wasn't, you know, it's not easy. It's a bit of a psychic shock to go from being a magazine editor where you're being a kind of filter for your readers and picking out what's important and interpreting for them. And you're a professional, you take your role very seriously, to a new world in which anybody can be a journalist or at least commit an act of journalism. And so it's a difficult transition.
Well, surely, though, the trick is to get paid, right? I mean, isn't that the... You've got people like Arianna Huffington who've made millions out of slave labor, essentially, just aggregating other people's work. You're teaching...
Well, she's now starting to hire journalists.
That's true.
But they have bloggers who are unpaid, that's correct.
So what do you tell your students, then, about this new, the new salt mines of journalism?
Well, what we tell them is that you have to learn all the skills to succeed in this new world, which means what I call the eternal verities of traditional journalism, all the fine reporting and writing and analytic thinking and ethical values that define mainstream media for all these years, and you have to learn all the new stuff. You have to learn to do multimedia journalism, to provide interactivity, to do podcasting and blogging, and you will get a job. And that, in fact, has turned out to be true. 90% of the students are working in journalism within 6-7 months of commencement. Now, these are graduate students, mind you. These are not undergraduates, so they're a little older, a little more experienced. But they're getting jobs. What we look for is a passion for journalism. And I'm very happy to say that most of the students I see have the same passion, the same reason to get into journalism that my generation did. And if you really care and you really want to be a journalist, then you will learn what is necessary, and I think you can be successful. One other thing, you know, we all concentrate on all the jobs that are being lost and the closings of bureaus and cutbacks and so on, and we lose sight of all the new jobs that are being created and all the new entities that are springing up. ProPublica to do investigative reporting, Politico in Washington, the Huffington Post, the Daily Beast, the Center for Investigative Reporting. There are all kinds of new outlets for journalism now and all kinds of new jobs. So some are being lost, some places are having a lot of trouble, but new things are springing up and new opportunities are being created.
So it seems to me, though, the biggest, in many ways, the biggest problem that this country faces is that there's increasingly less and less of a consensus about what is true. And in this landscape, and of course we saw the debates last night where one candidate was saying stuff that the other candidate was saying is not true, but, you know, how much time does one candidate want to waste trying to fact-check the other? And then when the fact-checks come out the next day, Fox News argues that the fact-checkers are propaganda, and many people argue that Fox News is a propaganda organ. So, you know, Christians get their information from Christian newspapers and television, liberals from MSNBC, conservatives from Fox. How do we have a consensus in this country about what is true? I mean, it seems to me that is so fundamental for operating in the real world.
Yeah. Well, you have to make a distinction between partisan politics, which is what we're seeing 2 weeks before an important national election, and what is reported in the media. The media is, for the most part, mainstream media in particular, is trying to be fair-minded. It is true that there are outlets that are partisan, and you name MSNBC on the left and Fox on the right, and that's correct. But there's also CNN that is more or less in the middle, and there are reputable newspapers that try to get it right. It doesn't mean they don't make mistakes sometimes, but they don't come at it with an ideological agenda. And I'm talking about most of the major newspapers in this country, the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times and the Dallas Morning News and the Boston Globe and Chicago Tribune and so forth. So I think you have to make a distinction between media and politics.
Well, but two of those papers you just mentioned, the Chicago Tribune and the Los Angeles Times, are likely to be bought by Rupert Murdoch, who does not exactly have, even though he has a love of newspapers, he doesn't seem to have a love of the truth, and he's highly partisan.
Yeah, it depends whether you get the good Rupert or the bad Rupert. The bad Rupert we saw on display in London with all the scandals involving the News of the World, or even to some degree in New York with the New York Post, which is highly partisan on its editorial page, and news pages a little less so. But the good Rupert is what you see in the Wall Street Journal, which in its news pages has not been politicized by Murdoch. It is still regarded as a fair and very, very good comprehensive newspaper. The editorial pages, of course, are the heart of conservative politics in the United States. But that was true before Murdoch bought it. So he hasn't had to do anything to the editorial page. It already had his agenda in mind. So, but if you look at the rest of the paper, the news coverage and the economic commentary that they do, it's pretty fair. So I would say that if you get Rupert buying the LA Times and the Chicago Tribune, which the rumors are that he will, if he does a good job, he's a newspaper man, and he has put a lot of money into the Wall Street Journal's coverage and technological innovation and so on. And if he does that with the Los Angeles Times, that would be a good thing as long as he keeps politically out of the news. Now, he will do what he wants to the editorial page, of course, but that's the right of any owner.
So, obviously, when you talk about deadlines and disruption, my turbulent path from print to digital, there's certainly a lot of turbulence in the print part. There's the so-called dead tree business. We've just had Newsweek ending its print edition, announcing that just a little over a week ago. So, tell me, though, about, you know, since you've been in the print business for a number of years and seen the changes, it seems to me that the best run, or the most highly regarded newspaper, for example, the New York Times, is family owned. A lot of people feel that when the Washington Post became less of Katharine Graham's paper and more of a corporate paper, it lost a lot. This is equally true of the Los Angeles Times when the Chandler family stopped being in charge, and it became, well, its whole story is pretty sad with Sam Zell's leveraged buyout, etc. But the point I'm getting at is that for better or for worse, a lot of the history of newspaper ownership in this country have been, you know, the Colonel McCormick's, the Rupert Murdoch's, and you get the good with the bad. What's your sense, though, of the difference between privately owned, family-owned papers and corporate-owned news?
Well, I'm not a big believer that the form of ownership matters that much to the quality of the papers. As you've pointed out, some family-controlled newspapers going way back to the time of Hearst and even Pulitzer. Pulitzer is known for the Pulitzer Prizes today, but in his day, the New York World was a very partisan practitioner of yellow journalism. Of course, the Hearst newspapers were notorious, and that carries on to the present day. I mean, you get very responsible journalism under family ownership. You get mediocre journalism under family ownership. And you get very partisan journalism depending on who owns it. The New York Times is family controlled. It's not family owned. It's a public company. The Washington Post is a public company, although it's family controlled as well. The LA Times, of course, is a special case because the Chandler family sold, unlike the Grahams and unlike the Sulzbergers, who didn't sell. The Chandlers made the decision to sell, just as the Bancrofts made the decision to sell the Wall Street Journal. And then Sam Zell came along, and whatever the problems in the newspaper industry were and are, and they're very significant, Sam Zell added a layer of disaster, basically, to the papers he acquired, loading them up with debt, and they're finally going to come out of Chapter 11 bankruptcy pretty soon, and they'll have a new lease on life. But that was a very special case. I want to talk about just newspapers in general, because they can do very, very well. And I think, you know, whoever ends up owning the Los Angeles Times is going to have to make a decision about the editorial content, whether to focus locally on the city of Los Angeles and the region and Southern California in general, and forego some of the other coverage and link to whatever else they need for Washington coverage, international coverage, and concentrate on what they do best and link to the rest. And I think that would probably be a wise strategy because advertising revenue is very, very diminished and unable to support a newspaper that tries to be all things to all people. Let me just give you one statistic. Newspapers in the last 5 or 6 years have lost half of their advertising revenue. That's $25 billion. And digital advertising is not making up the difference. The amount of digital advertising has grown by less than a billion. So we have a serious problem on our hands of all newspapers, whether they were mucked up by Sam Zell or they just have the regular problems like the New York Times and the Washington Post and so on. So I think newspapers are going to have to start charging for content online the way the New York Times has done with its metering system, which is very, very successful. Traffic has not fallen off. We're seeing this in other newspapers that have adapted a pay system for subscribers, that the traffic does not fall off. And I think more papers are going to have to develop this new revenue stream. The Times, the New York Times, is realizing more than $100 million in an annual rate in new revenue, which pays for half of their newsroom. So it's a very good thing, and they're going to have to learn how to sell advertising better in a targeted way in this new internet age. And they're, you know, it's been slow in happening, but ultimately I think it will. And in the end, you know, we really have to ask ourselves whether the dead trees that you were talking about is the way to go. And it may be that ultimately newspapers will stop be delivered on paper and be digital only on the web, on iPads and tablets and on smartphones and so forth. And you know what? That's sort of okay with me because we are not in the printing business. We are not in the paper business. We are in the journalism business. And what matters is good journalism has to survive on any platform, whether it's print or digital.
Well, just in closing, Stephen Shepherd, what's your sense, though, with this new mix of citizen journalism versus traditional journalism, the move from print to digital, and the overarching problem of infotainment seeping in both in newspapers and in particularly in television? You know, to do this program on a daily basis, the internet is great because I go to the BBC, The Economist, a lot of the good websites who really cover global news in ways that you don't really get much here in the US. So there's an international menu out there, but there's no question that serious inquiry, I mean, for example, in that debate last night, one of the most serious issues of all is global warming, what didn't even come up. So we are, you know, in an age of information deficit where seriousness is considered boring and fluff is considered preferable.
Well, you know, that to me is a cultural and educational problem, not particularly a problem of the news media per se, because as you just pointed out, you can get very, very good coverage if you're interested in international affairs. There is the BBC, and there is the Guardian, and there is NPR, and there is the New York Times, and there is Reuters, and there is the AP, and there is Bloomberg, and there is Global Post. There are a lot of ways to get international coverage. So if your local newspaper isn't doing it itself, A, it can link to them on its website, so you go to the website of the Los Angeles Times and you'll have access to all the best international reporting, or you do it yourself and you go find your own stories that interest you. It's there. My point is the news media is doing it. Now, just because some people are interested only in fluff or infotainment doesn't mean the material isn't available for serious readers. So are most people going to be serious readers? No, and you know what? They weren't. Most people were not serious readers even 50 years ago. So, you know, we have problems that are problems of the society, of the culture, of the educational system, which are different from what the news media is providing, because there's a lot of good coverage out there now.
Well, I guess I should. I must be a liberal elitist, I think.
Well, you can find that too, Ian.
Well, thank you for joining us, Steve Shevitz, and for your new book, Deadlines and Disruption, My Turbulent Path from Print to Digital.
Thank you very much, Ian. I enjoyed it.
Again, I've been speaking with Stephen Shepherd, who previously served as senior editor at Newsweek and editor-at-large of Businessweek. He was also president of the American Society of Magazine Editors, where he was inducted into its Hall of Fame in 1999. He's now dean of the City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism, which is on the cutting edge of journalism education in the digital age. His new book just out is Deadlines and Disruption, My Turbulent Path from Print to Digital. And this has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where we welcome your comments. And the conversation continues online at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again at 5 p.m. tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.